Here on Stolen Lives, we discuss brutal and heartbreaking crimes against children. Themes may include child murder, torture, and sexual, domestic, and child abuse. I do try my best to remain respectful for the babies in these stories and leave out unnecessary details that honestly, none of us need to know to understand the frustration of why and how this ever happened. However, if you find any of these themes triggering, this podcast may not be for you. Listener discretion is advised. This week's episode is a listener suggestion. Thank you to Laura for bringing Marissa's story to my attention. This story is one that is extremely heartbreaking, and this young girl's murder almost gets overshadowed by the political players trying to elevate their own election campaigns. To add to this, Marissa's identity was initially protected by a publication ban until after the trial was complete. But Marissa is a person who loved and was loved. She had plans for the future and was only just discovering who she was before her life was stolen away from her. She deserves to be the most important player in this story, so she is not forgotten. July 2017, Burnaby in Vancouver, Canada. In the early morning hours, police were searching for a 13-year-old girl who was reported missing 2 hours earlier. Tragically, her body would be found in a wooded area. She was brutally, sexually assaulted and strangled. She was pronounced dead at the scene. After a year-long investigation, an arrest was made. But what would follow is a case filled with delays and controversies, overshadowing what is of most importance here. Justice for Marissa Shen. This is Marissa's story.
Marissa Shen was just 13, ready to start grade 9 in the fall. Her death has shocked people here, even those who didn't know her.
It's tragic. Loss of a 13-year-old as a mother, to a daughter as well, that hits hard, right?
Shen lived with her family near Burnaby Central Park. That's where her body was found in a heavy wooded area less than 2 hours after she was reported missing.
The evidence recovered doesn't indicate if Miss Shen was the intended victim of homicide or if her homicide was a random act.
Police haven't said how Shen was killed or what led them to her body so quickly. Investigators say she left her home at 6 o'clock Tuesday evening and didn't come back.
Marissa Shen was born October 20th, 2003, the second child born into the family. The Shens had actually only ever planned on having one child. The first child, a boy named Peter, born in 1992. But then as he got older and they got older, they didn't want to leave Peter alone one day when they died, so along came Marissa. In July 2017, when our story takes place, Marissa had just finished the 8th grade, where she excelled at sports. It seemed that any sport Marissa tried her hand to, she was just a natural at. Basketball, baseball, and capture the flag were her favourites, and she intended on trying out for the badminton team the following school year. Marissa loved anime and cosplay. She was a very talented seamstress and artist, making her own cosplay costumes. She would always sketch during her classes at school at her teacher's playful dismay. Like with most teenagers, Marissa had a habit of oversleeping, causing her to run late and miss breakfast. But that was okay, because there was always her beloved coffee to kickstart her mornings. There is a post on Reddit written by one of Marissa's closest school friends at the time of their graduation in 2022. It is a heartbreaking read, and I will really try and remember to place a link to this in the show notes because it really captures the true essence of who Marissa was. She was reckless, loud, and slightly annoying, as she was kind, smart, caring, and honest. That she was faultlessly honest. That the biggest lie she ever told this friend, that she was going to see her the next day. Ever tried to break a bad habit and felt like you're climbing Mount Everest in flip-flops? Yeah, I've been there too. But here is a breath of fresh air. Foom. It's not about giving up, it's switching up. Foom takes your habit and simply makes it better, healthier, and a whole lot more enjoyable. Foom is an innovative, award-winning flavoured air device that does just that. Instead of vapour, Fume uses flavoured air. Instead of electronics, Fume is completely natural. And instead of harmful chemicals, Fume uses delicious flavours. You get it. Instead of bad, Fume is good. It really makes replacing your bad habit easy. Your Fume comes with an adjustable airflow dial and is designed with movable parts and magnets for fidgeting, giving your fingers a lot to do, which is helpful for distressing and anxiety while breaking your habit. My partner just purchased the Journey Pack for himself after always taking my Fume. He has anxiety like me and trying to replace some bad habits he has to deal with those anxieties. And he has a lot of the same positives, I say. It's just a great distraction. He likes fidgeting with the airflow dial and it allows him to focus on breathing. Plus the flavours, you guys. I myself am a traditionalist, so mint is my go-to. It's so fresh and, well, minty. Luke, though, is quite partial to the maple pepper. He enjoys the more woodsy type taste. But there are literally so many flavours to try in the Journey Pack, so you're bound to find one that suits you. Start the year off right with the good habit by going to tryfume.com/stolen and get the Journey Pack today. Fume is giving listeners to the show 10% off when they use my code STOLEN to help make starting the good habit that much easier. July 18th, 2017. It was summer vacation and 13-year-old Marissa had spent the day at home texting friends. Her home being in an apartment complex in Burnaby, Vancouver, Canada. It was quite a lovely area, actually, surrounded by greenage and with relatively low crime. In particular, the family lived close by to Central Park. But on this day, her parents were at work and her brother Peter was in Beijing, China, where he was studying and he had been living for the past couple of years. Most likely bored from being home alone all day, Marissa left the apartment building where she lived at with her parents at 6:02 p.m. Surveillance video would capture her movements here. She appeared relaxed and okay, not in any apparent distress. Marissa then headed to a Tim Hortons on the 6200 block of McKay Avenue, taking her usual shortcut through Burnaby Central Park. Bank transactions would show that Marissa stayed at the Tim Hortons for about an hour, before heading along the same path back to her home. Now, it wasn't uncommon for Marissa to stay out until 9:30 of an evening. It was a safe area with a solid police presence. It was considered normal for teenagers to walk home during the nighttime hours, and Marissa was an avid walker. It was something she did to clear her mind. She would walk to Tim Hortons, grab a coffee, chat to some friends, and then go for a long walk around Central Park with her earbuds in, listening to her favourite Japanese rock music. But on this night, when the clock hit 11 and Marissa not only hadn't returned home, she also wasn't answering her phone, her mother was worried. Unsure what else to do, Marissa's mother contacted Peter, asking him for help. Their parents were Mandarin speaking and their mother was panicking, so what English she did know wasn't coming to her easy. Peter tried to reassure her. He was certain he would call Marissa's phone and get her right away. That maybe she had her earbuds in and didn't get to her phone in time for their mother's call. But Peter couldn't reach his sister either. That's when Peter reported Marissa missing to police. The Burnaby Mounted Police were immediately on the scene, scouring the area between Marissa's home and the Tim Hortons, focusing on Central Park as this was where Marissa's phone last pinged. This is no small feat. Burnaby Central Park is vast, 86 acres in total, for police and volunteers to meticulously search. But then, only minutes into the search, Marissa's phone and wallet were found discarded by a bike path. This was not the find authorities wanted, but everyone tried to stay positive. However, 90 minutes later, the search was dealt a crushing blow. At 1:10 a.m, July 19th, 2017, only 2 hours after Marissa Shen was reported missing, her body was found in a wooded area of the park, lying on her back, with her shirt and sports bra pulled up and her shorts partially pulled down. It was clear Marissa had been brutally raped and strangled in a frenzied attack. Marissa was taken to Burnaby Hospital. Here, she was pronounced dead.
This is a terrible tragedy, and our thoughts and prayers are with Ms. Shen's family. As a father, I can tell you I appreciate how difficult this is for our community. I know many of you may be wondering if your children are safe. All I can tell you at this time is that I have full confidence in IHIT's ability to investigate the circumstances surrounding Ms. Shen's death. And I can assure you that the Burnaby RCMP and its officers are working around the clock to ensure public safety. We have many police resources in place here in Burnaby, as well as additional police resources from outlying areas like Surrey, North Van, Coquitlam, and Richmond. We also have integrated units who are helping us as well. They're working around the clock to ensure public safety, as are our Burnaby officers. Many details into the cause of Ms. Shen's death are currently unknown, but we ask that families have a conversation with your kids about safety. It's always good to do this with your kids, and we ask that you be vigilant and be aware of your surroundings.
Marissa's murder deeply affected the community of Burnaby. Residents demanded answers. Were they safe walking in their local parks? Because at first, it was unclear if this was a personal attack or if this was a potential serial sex offender. It did seem random, but police had no leads or suspects. Contributing to the unease was a constant large law enforcement presence at Central Park. There were general duty officers, bike patrols, community response teams and ununiformed officers, as well as homicide investigators who were almost outnumbering those out simply enjoying the warm summer weather. At its peak, more than 300 officers were involved in the investigation. Adding more to the concern of the community were warnings broadcasted in the media for people to be on guard in the area of Central Park and to keep a close eye on their children. Because in all honesty, police were at a loss. Lead investigator Superintendent Chuck McDonald implored people who were in the area that night to help them piece together evidence. They were after photos, videos, dash cameras, anything. Quote, "No matter how insignificant you think it might be, there's no need to screen the video looking for anything. We can add that to our database. That's really important." Unquote. In the first 2 weeks of the investigation, police had identified and eliminated more than 2,000 persons of interest. More than 1,300 residents were canvassed, more than 600 interviews conducted, and more than 1,000 hours of video footage were reviewed as part of the investigation. A website was launched to solicit tips from the public, receiving 80,000 visits. Everyone wanted this murder solved, both for the safety of the community and for the Shens, who became endeared to the public. July 22, 2017. A candlelight vigil was held in Central Park that was attended to by all of Marissa's closest friends, as well as community members who were deeply affected. Everyone was grief-stricken, but also outraged that something like this could happen in their neighbourhood. July 28, 2017, 10 days after her life was taken, Marissa Shen was cremated at Mountain View Cemetery, a funeral service attended to by over 100 friends and family. Heartbreakingly, Peter gave tribute to his baby sister in her eulogy. Quote, "When Marissa came, it was a breath of fresh air. She was the shining beacon that heralded the end of my loneliness in this world. I know that even if I lost everyone in this world, I would have one person to have my back. It was Marissa and me together against the world." Unquote. Marissa's casket was surrounded by blue roses, her favourite flower. Marissa was dressed in all her favourite clothes, black leggings and a grey hoodie. On her left wrist was a trio of bracelets from Hot Topic, her favourite store, the same bracelets she had purchased the day before her murder. When Marissa's body was carried out in the casket, her mother let out a piercing wail of grief and then collapsed into her son's arms. Quote, "It was one of the toughest things I've ever had to do, holding my mum up while she cried." Unquote. 9 months after Marissa's murder, in April 2018, the RCMP's Behavioural Sciences Group developed a criminal profile of the unknown killer. That's the person likely lived near Central Park at the time of the murder, and they may have started to act strangely after her death. that they may have moved from the area to avoid Central Park. They may have withdrew from their social life, increased risky behaviours, and had a heavy interest in the media coverage of Marissa's murder. It was possibly because of this and the male DNA found inside of Marissa that her killer was eventually found. Almost 10 months after Marissa's murder, on September 7, 2018, police announced the arrest of a Syrian immigrant, 28-year-old Ibrahim Ali, and he was charged with the first-degree murder of 13-year-old Marissa Shen.
I'm here today to announce a significant development in the investigation into the murder of 13-year-old Marissa Shen, whose body was located over 1 year ago on July 19, 2017, in Burnaby's Central Park. Since that time, this file has become IHIT's largest active investigation and one of the largest that we have handled to date, with over 2,300 investigative tasks being completed. Based on new evidence that was recently gathered by our investigators, we are able to confirm one person as the prime suspect. What I can tell you right now is that that suspect is in custody. 28-year-old Ibrahim Ali was arrested in Burnaby, BC on September 7th, 2018 and was charged with the first-degree murder of Marissa Shen. We still believe that this crime was a random act, meaning that Marissa did not know the suspect and vice versa. Beyond that, as far as motive is concerned and some of the details surrounding our operational techniques in identifying persons of interest or confirming suspects, I am not able to discuss these matters in order to protect our future judicial proceedings.
I want to begin by expressing my sincere condolences to Marissa's family. While I understand that there is some relief at the announcement of an arrest, I am mindful of the devastating loss that they have suffered. Since the day of Marissa's murder, the thoughts of everyone at Burnaby Detachment have been with her family, and we hope today that the news helps in your healing process in the weeks, months, and years to follow. To our community in Burnaby, I want to express my gratitude for your patience. Throughout this investigation, Marissa's murder shook our community, and it questioned the safety in our parks. We have been and we continue to conduct high visibility patrols on foot, on bikes, and in our vehicles to ensure that everyone can continue to feel safe in our parks. We're dedicated to the safety of our community, and we are listening and always open to concerns that you bring to us.
So, who is Ibrahim Ali? As I mentioned, he was a 28-year-old immigrant from Syria. He was living in Burnaby just like the Shens. He was living in low-cost housing at the time. He also had extended family living in this apartment complex, several brothers and their wives and children. Ali had immigrated to Canada in March of 2017, so only 4 months before Marissa was murdered. Now, it isn't clear what led police to Ali. He wasn't known to police. He didn't have a criminal record in either Canada nor Syria. Police have actually never stated how he came to their attention. As I mentioned, they had the DNA evidence, but what led them to test it against Ali, it's not clear. Now, according to the True North True Crime podcast, police were using the controversial technique called dragnetting, where they ask community members to voluntarily submit their DNA for testing. And I imagine the DNA found in Marissa would have shown particular ethnic markers. So we have the psychological profile stating the killer lived close to Central Park, and police knew what ethnicity they were looking for. This really would have narrowed down the playing field when looking for potential suspects. The criminal trial itself was delayed numerous times, initially set for September 2020. But because of COVID, trials were delayed or held over Zoom or dismissed entirely. This really set back the whole justice process here. So the trial was then set for September 2021 and then September 19th, 2022. Before finally, Ibrahim Ali fronted court for the first time on January 16th, 2023, Ali pleading not guilty to all charges. The Crown prosecution argued Ali laid in wait for a vulnerable victim to take advantage of when he spotted Marissa walking through the park alone. That he attacked her and dragged her into the nearby woods before she was sexually assaulted and strangled to death. To support their version of events, the jury heard from dozens of witnesses, including first responders, the pathologist who studied Marissa's body and brain, forensic specialists who matched DNA found in Marissa back to Ali, as well as Marissa's family and friends who were overwhelmed in their grief missing the outgoing and spunky teen.
The 19-year-old witness entered the courtroom with an interpreter before sitting behind a large white sheet that shielded her from the view of Ibrahim Ali, the man accused of killing her close friend. Ali could see her via computer monitor. She testified in Mandarin. The witness told the court she knew the victim for about 11 months. The pair went to Moscow Secondary School together in Burnaby, and they were in a summer school program together in the summer of 2017. She described the victim as a teenager who loved watching cartoons and playing games. She said the two of them would study, go to the park, go to the library, and go shopping together. They'd even hang out at Burnaby Central Park. She said to her knowledge, the victim didn't drink, do drugs, go to parties, or have a boyfriend, and the pair of them always had to be home before dark. Now, she said she last saw the victim at school on July 18th, 2017. There was a fire drill, so they met up at the park, at the school playground. She took a few short videos of the victim. Those clips were reviewed in court today and entered as exhibits.
The defense did not call any witnesses in the trial. Ali's lawyers telling the jury that the Crown had not proved its case against Ali. In particularly damaging to the prosecution's argument was the loss of testimony from Dr. Tracy Pickett. Sexual assault expert Dr. Pickett, who was a specialist in emergency and clinical forensic medicine. Dr. Pickett examined Marissa's body after her murder and she testified for the prosecution. But the cross-examination by the defence was never completed, and this was because she was found dead on September 28, 2023. But because the cross-examination was never completed, the judge ordered the whole testimony to be disregarded by the jury. And this was a major part of the prosecution's evidence that a sexual assault had taken place. December 8, 2023. After 9 months of witness statements and expert evidence, the prosecution and defence presented their closing statements. In his closing argument, lead defence counsel Kevin McCullough suggested Marissa wasn't the innocent schoolgirl the prosecution portrayed, that they believed her and Ali to have some kind of scandalous affair, and that they may have had consensual sex, which explained his DNA being inside of her. However, it must be said, if I have to even say it, this is fucking ridiculous that a 13-year-old child can consent to sexual activity with a 28-year-old man. Under Canadian law, a person must be at least 16 years old to be able to legally consent to sex. Only minutes after retiring for deliberation, the jury came back with its decision after asking the judge to clarify the difference between first and second degree murder and manslaughter. The jury finding Ibrahim Ali guilty of the first degree murder of 13-year-old Marissa Shen. And in Canada, for first degree murder, there is a mandatory life sentence with no chance of parole for 25 years. Ali had little reaction to the verdict, and those in the packed courtroom went completely silent when the verdict was read out. December 12, 2023, days after the trial ended, Marissa's father was arrested by the Vancouver Police Department for allegedly bringing a loaded Glock pistol into the courtroom on the last day of trial with the intent to kill defence counsel Kevin McCullough. Now, I say allegedly because this is all hearsay, rumours and Chinese whispers. Because Marissa's father was never actually caught entering the courtroom with the pistol. The Supreme Court in Vancouver does not have metal detection or other security checks. And I thought Australia was a trusting country. Canada, you just upped that a notch. Their reasonings behind this was because the courtrooms were surrounded by bulletproof glass that separates the public gallery from the lawyers, defendants and the jury. Marissa's father was released pending further investigation by the police. But as I said, because no one caught him with the gun in the courtroom, there was never any solid proof. The charges would be dropped, but Marissa's father was still banned from being physically present for any post-trial court proceedings. McCullough would make a public spectacle about the accusations, though, claiming he received a letter allegedly from Marissa's father threatening the life of both himself and his family. Quote, "It will happen before Christmas. The last thing you will know is that your family suffers like the child suffered. I am suicidal due to childhood predators looking for someone to cause pain to. I'll burn myself alive." Unquote. After his arrest and sentence, Ibrahim Ali's status as a recent Syrian refugee brought into question Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's immigration policy. Although it must be said again that Ali had family already living in Canada, and he did not have any criminal record prior to coming to Canada and not following, not until Marissa. I guess there is that argument that maybe he did commit crimes. He just hadn't been caught until he murdered Marissa, but we can only go with the facts here. I think it is important to understand the situation in Syria and what led Ali and his family to immigrate to Canada, because this does play a part in the Canadian immigration policy and the debate over whether this needs to change. Now, I'm not going to get into the deep political discussion about this, mostly because that's not what's important here, and politics really aren't my forte. But I will break down the basics here. Since 2011, Syria has experienced a lot of political unrest, resulting in a civil war. And by 2013, over 1 million refugees were attempting to flee the country. This was the result of serious human rights violations, with families living in overcrowded humanitarian camps. And as with any war, innocent people were dying. Canada was one of many countries that offered aid and pledged to accept up to 30,000 refugees from Syria, to give them a chance for a new life that was safe and secure and without the fear of not knowing if there was going to be a tomorrow. Now, where this all relates to Marissa's story. In 2013, Ali's eldest brother was given refugee status by the Canadian government. In an effort to reunite the family, a Vancouver church group raised $45,000 to then sponsor two other brothers and their families, as well as Ibrahim Ali, to gain immigrant status to Canada. And this should have been an amazing feel-good story. A large extended family escaping violence and uncertainty for a new life and all the opportunities that Canada held for them. Instead, it brought heartbreak and loss for another family on that fateful night in July of 2017. The discussion for greater screening of immigrants became a major platform for debate during the Burnaby South federal by-election in February 2019. People's Party candidate Laura Lynn Thompson using Marissa's murder to boost her anti-immigration campaign. And Conservative MP Michelle Riepel making Marissa an example in her call for reform and screening of potential immigrants.
I just felt that we cannot blame the whole Islamic or Muslim or Arab community for the crime, because in any community, ethnic community, we have criminals coming from different communities. So it's fair that we blame the whole community, the ethnic community. So let's see this as what it is. It's a crime against women, against children. And we as a society, not just the Chinese community who care about this child who was murdered, but everyone who came out and support the mother, the family, and care about this case, innocent. I mean, this child, it's amazing. This girl, amazing girl, and died murdered in such a brutal manner. And every one of us should care, and every one of us should make recommendations and ensure our community is safer for everyone.
Marissa's mother communicated that while she appreciated Marissa being remembered, she doesn't want her legacy to become a political bargaining chip. Quote, "They should focus on the violence against women and children in our society, especially women of colour." Unquote. If you have your own thoughts and theories on the case we discussed today, or any case we talk about on Stolen Lives, please search Stolen Lives on Facebook. Like the page so you don't miss an episode and join the discussion group to talk about your thoughts and theories. You can also talk to us on Twitter, search lives_stolen, or on Instagram, Stolen Lives Podcast. If you like what you heard today, we would appreciate it if you share this episode on your social media of choice and subscribe and leave a positive review on your podcast app. Today's episode was researched and written by me, Ali. Hosting and production was also by me, Ali. Music is by Mayu.